Blog Talk Radio.
Bringing voices to power. I do not own the rights to this music. Bringing voices to power network. www.thechildsupporthustle.com. Catch the Child Support Hustle Show Saturdays on the Bringing the Voices to Power Network. United Voices with Sherry Saunders. EmpoweringStrategies.net.
Hello.
Okay, in this episode of the Grassroots Mouthpiece Show, I'll be talking with Amy Wasluka, candidate for Alabama Senate District 2. Amy is running for a number of reasons, and among them is expanding Medicaid, supporting public education and small businesses, and advocating for sentencing reform. Okay, good morning, Ms. Wasluka. How's it going?
It's going well. How are you?
I'm doing all right. I've heard your name pronounced two or three different times. I want you to say it so our listeners can hear it straight from the source.
I know. It's a difficult one. It's Wasluka. Kind of sounds like bazooka, but Was is in front of it.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Okay, tell us first thing, tell us what was the first instance where you realized, hey, I want to run for this seat? What was the determining factor?
I think the determining factor for me was the healthcare debate in 2016, both before and after the presidential election. As you know, I'm a childhood cancer survivor. I'm also half deaf, so I have lived many angles of the healthcare debate. I've also worked all of my life. And I've been on that side of the fence where even though you're working, you're not extended all the same protections in terms of health insurance because of a pre-existing condition. And when that healthcare debate was going on, I saw legislators which were offering or looking at the debate in terms of only one type of mindset. And it's such a multifaceted issue. We need people who are willing to look at healthcare from all directions and, you know, with an emphasis on empathy and extending healthcare to as many Alabamians as we can so that they can work.
Okay, now I'm going to ask you this because you're talking about healthcare and extending, you know, different ways to make it work. How do you stand on the medical cannabis issue? I see they had that. It was a big issue in the governor's debate in the Democratic Party the other night. How do you stand when it comes to just medical cannabis only? Because when you get into the recreation and all the other stuff, you know, the conversation can go in 10 different directions and people got 10 different misinformed reasons. But how do you feel about just the medical cannabis in Alabama?
The statistics and research which I have seen dealing with medical cannabis show that there is a place for it in our medical profession and that it can be used as an effective treatment for a variety of issues such as seizures and some implications in cancer therapy. So to that extent, and you know, I support its use.
Yeah, we've got to start here in Alabama and a few other places. We have got to start trusting this research. And some of this research is coming out of some of the top places like Harvard Medical School. I mean, I just can't understand why we are delaying it when it's evident. I mean, in the early 30s and 40s, you could go to the store and your doctor could prescribe it to you. I mean, it was all over the place. It was manufactured in Philadelphia, Ohio. But now, all of a sudden, you see John Boehner from Ohio. He's gotten with the cannabis group. But we see this was already in the American Pharmapedia. Now, it's like people are acting like we need to do more research. We need to look at this. To me, that's like a delay tactic. The evidence is there from all over the world. So why are we here in Alabama had Bentley, somebody like Bentley, and others to say we need more research? We've already had this thing on the market.
I agree. We do need to be building off of the research that is there currently and that is out there to be found.
Yeah. Okay, let's move to the citizen reform. I know there's been a lot of talk about citizen reform. Former Governor Dunn Sigmund, when he was still in prison, he was talking about that was going to be his life's mission once he got out. Now I hear a lot of Democrats and Republicans as well in the state and federal level talking about citizen reform. But what's your view on that, advocating for citizen reform?
Well, I think it's necessary. You know, we've had a lot of talk recently about the nature of Alabama's prison system and how it's overcrowded. And I've heard a lot of talk about building new prisons and investing in the prison system. And once again, I think that's a one-sided solution. That we need to look at why our prisons are so crowded to begin with, and we're not going to get an effective result till we look at sentencing reform. Because we have a lot of people going to prison for low-level, nonviolent drug offenses.
And in my opinion, coming from the grassroots perspective, all this is just being done to help the prison industrial complex. So if you build all those maximum prisons, a lot of these states, and Alabama is probably one of them. I should know that part of it. But a lot of these states have contracts with these private prison owners to keep them full. Now, if they got contracts to keep the prisons full, of course they need every body that they can stick into a prison, which causes a thirst, a hunt, and a pursuit of people to put in there to fulfill that contract.
And we don't have the private prisons in Alabama yet, which we're lucky because I know that they are in states surrounding us. However, we need to be leading the way here and saying that there is a better way forward, that we can decrease our prison population in a way that is responsible and keeps people out of jail, keeps their records clean so they can work. We need to be sending our Alabamians to work, not to prison.
Yes. And to go along with that, I hated to see some years back when they started phasing out a lot of these programs that would help prisoners. I mean, people sit down in Montgomery and sit on the bench in a row, and they think that just because you ended up in prison, like you said, a lot of them are low-level offenses. Well, why you got that person in there, why would you cut out things like the barbering program, the upholstery program? There should be programs that's funded by maybe not the state, but maybe funded by some of these colleges. They need to come in as well. They need to be training these people where they get out, they will have some hope. Just like the low-level offenses, say marijuana. You get a marijuana conviction, you go to prison, or go to jail, you get out, it's going to be difficult to get a job, to get a house, and even to vote. With those three things right there gone, and in a place like Alabama, gone forever, then you're really not even an American. If you can't get a job, you can't get a house, and you can't vote, I mean, you're destined to go back to prison.
Exactly. And we have a lot of talk every year when elections come up about people who rely on government assistance. Well, this is a population of people that we can help to be successful. We have two options. We can either help them to be successful when they get out and reduce the chance of recidivism and reduce the chance that they do need to rely on the government, or we can't. And we are making that choice when we elect officials that don't engage in these things.
And I think some of those officials, like I said, they just look at the ordinary regular person that gets into trouble like they're trash, they're expendable. We can put them there, we can justify this program, that program, and while we got them there, we ought to be trying to rehabilitate them.
Exactly.
Okay, when you talk about small, what do you have in mind when you talk about small businesses in Alabama and in your district?
Well, we've got an opportunity for small business, especially in my district, to be very successful. District 2 is the Madison, East Limestone area. We've seen a lot of growth here. A lot of growth is projected within the next 10 years. We need to ensure that we're capitalizing on attracting and maintaining businesses by ensuring that our education and infrastructure businesses will be attracted to the area. We also need to look at what things our small businesses, which are flourishing here, need to continue to be successful and to grow. So, for example, we have a very successful, aerospace helicopter refurbishing industry here in Madison, but the nearest trade school that offers the certification you need to be employed there is in Nashville. So that would be, just an example of one of the things that I would like to do for our district to ensure that people who live in District 2 are getting the jobs which are created here.
Okay. Let me, do you think what we need to do is, just like with this upcoming plant, do we need more of these training programs that will fit these companies that are coming in?
We do. I don't think that we have enough training programs for people who want 2-year or less than a 4-year degree. I think we have a lot of opportunity to grow our jobs in that sector. And I think it would behoove us to start investing in that now.
Yes, because there's going to be a lot of jobs spinning off from that. I know they're going to employ a whole lot of people, but the spinoff jobs, especially in the early process, we're going to need just a lot of general laborers. It doesn't require a whole lot of training, but it requires a person to fill that position.
Exactly. And it would be, we can bring companies here, but we also have to make sure when those companies bring jobs here, those jobs are able to be filled by our citizens.
Okay, you in the Madison area, I'm going to ask you, you covering that area, I'm going to ask you about a touchy subject that they had just the other night. What do you feel about those citizens who live around the Three Springs area who want that thing closed or either moved? I think the mayor even said that it could be on the table in the future to move it.
I'll be honest, I have not looked at that issue very much recently, so I don't have a position formulated on that right now for you.
Yeah, okay. Well, I think they extended their contract, and they're going to give them a little while longer. They got to put in some safeguards. When I was watching some of the citizens that live in that area, they're still terrified. And I worked there. I was a supervisor at Three Springs, the one in Cortland, the facility in Cortland. I was a supervisor there for a year. But it is good that somebody is reaching out trying to help these kids, to give them a second chance. But if you take a position like that and that is your business, then you should do it the right way. And I just want to say, from my own personal perspective, I've watched them for years understaff. And as long as when you understaff at a place like that, you're going to have runaways. And the runaways are not going to stop. the cameras, we had cameras and we had two escapes, but luckily we caught them fast. Within, I think the longest one, he was gone for like 30 minutes. But you got to staff a place like that, and I don't blame those people that live in that Three Spring area out there in Madison. If they don't want to staff that place, then they should close or either move. Okay, when we talk about
it does highlight an issue that we have in terms of the funding for our mental health care system. You know, a while back when we closed some of our mental health hospitals, the thought was that the funding would follow our mental health patients out. And there hasn't been that following of funding, and there hasn't been good options for in-treatment services that people need. So we need to look at what gaps we have in terms of providing for mental health care and how we can better close those.
And if we don't, and if we can't provide it in those mental health settings like the ones they close, then, and even in the jails, person dealing with mental health issues, they're not going to be properly served in jail. So maybe the jails need extra funding for something themselves, which they probably don't have time for security reasons to be, you know, shuttling the mentally ill back and forth to places. I just think it was a bad idea to close and dry up the funding for these mental health facilities here in Alabama. But I think Birmingham, well, they talked about that the other night. Candidate Maddox talked about how he sued to keep their mental health facility open.
So yeah, okay, Birmingham. Sorry, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
I would say Birmingham does have some good mental health facilities. And, you know, that's one of the things that we can do. We don't always have to reinvent the wheel. We can look at what other areas are doing.
Okay, when it comes to public education, what are some of the most pressing issues from your standpoint of view? And I have to ask you this, do you support private schooling? Well, private schooling, somebody wants to do it, but do you support funding being taken away from public schooling to go to private schooling?
No, I don't. And the reason for that is then you still have the same problem for all the other children who remain in public school. And they have less money to help their school systems. Some of the biggest issues that I see in terms of our education today are the way we value and pay our teachers. I don't know that we are paying our teachers or funding our public education system in a manner that is equal to the value that we place as individuals on education. I think if you ask 10 people off the street how important education is to them, they would rank it in one of their top 10 values, but we're not funding it that way. And we're not paying our public school teachers in a way that encourages them to get in and to stay in the profession. You know, my parents were both public school teachers. They taught math and science for over 20 years, and they would go 8 years without any pay raise. And when they'd finally get one, that pay raise would be canceled out by an increase in their health insurance. So as the years have progressed, the cost of living has gone up, and there's been nothing to incentivize these teachers to stay in as their salaries get lower and lower in relation to the cost of living. We're also asking teachers to – oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to add in that that you're exactly right. When I attended Alabama A&M, a lot of my friends, they were wanting to become teachers, and some of them – you know, they were disappointed that they had to leave Alabama just to find a decent job.
Yep. And we're also asking our teachers to do more and more. A lot of times teachers will provide for school supplies out of their own income. Teachers will have to be, you know, have to figure out creative ways to make up for, you know, help with homework or help with other things that, you know, students are not getting outside of the home. So we're putting more and more requirements and, you know, more and more responsibility on our teachers, and we're not even compensating them in a way that's commensurate with that.
Yes. When it comes,
I think that
when it comes, no, go ahead.
I was going to say, so I think that's a real issue that we're going to have to address if we want to maintain maintain our school systems.
When it comes to a lottery, now I sort of favor like the Dunn-Sigelman structure of a lottery, an educational lottery, and he had some problems with that on how it was rolled out and people didn't fully understand it. To my understanding, almost all of that was going to go toward education. If they brought an education lottery up, would you be a senator that would fight for more money to go toward education and less toward that general budget and discretionary fund? We need to ensure that, because I hear Republicans, after they fought so hard and after, in my opinion, and with the opinion of over 116 current and former attorney generals, Dunn-Sigelman was railroaded. So with that being said, would you support or would you fight to get as much money going earmarked toward education? Because we know when it gets down in Montgomery, every special interest group and every senator who is against education, they're going to be doing everything they can to divert any funding that would come from that toward their own pet projects or like some black hole, like a discretionary fund.
And I think you hit on the key word there, is earmarking. You know, we've seen lotteries and gambling come to other states with the thought that they would go towards funding education, for example, in Missouri. Whereas when they brought gambling to Missouri, that money that came went to fund education, then money was taken out of the education budget from other sources. So it wound up not helping education above and beyond what they already had. So when we think about a lottery, we really do need to be sure that if we bring one, we are making sure, absolutely sure, that all the proceeds that come from that lottery are going to go towards helping our education and helping our students. I would particularly like to see it go towards helping with upper education, similar to the HOPE Scholarship Program in Georgia. When I went to college, a lot of my sorority sisters were there on the HOPE Scholarship, and I think that, you know, that's another area of education that people are really struggling with these days, is how are we going to afford college? How are we going to afford to send our kids to college? How are, you know, kids going to be able to afford college and then go out on their own with a lot of debt? And while by no means is the lottery a silver bullet to deal with that issue, it is a step in the right direction, but we do have to do it correctly and make sure that if we bring a lottery to help with that, that those funds are going straight to our kids.
Yes. And let me ask you this other question. What do you feel about a gas tax to help with roads? I know they haven't. I know some goes toward roads, but do you think maybe the gas tax should increase? And I know that's a bad thing to think about right now. These prices keep skyrocketing up. But do you think that we tax businesses and oil companies, and do you think we tax them enough comparable with other states?
I will say no, I don't know that we do. However, looking at our infrastructure, the funding is going to have to come from somewhere. I think the most likely course of action is going to be a small addition to the gas tax. But I am open to looking at different ways we can, you know, remove as much of that burden as possible from the people.
Okay, what do you feel about and this is another thing that's been mentioned in Democratic political circles. What do you think about removing this grocery tax? I know we're surrounded by states that don't have a tax on necessary things people need every day. I mean, I think we should remove it, but there's different angles on this. But should we tax the people in a poor state like Alabama for groceries and things they need to survive?
Ideally, no. However, I get concerned when we talk about removing the grocery tax that we would open the door to comprehensive tax reform, which we have seen, you know, kind of the implications of what happens when we do that on a federal level. And I don't know that our state legislature is such in Alabama that we would wind up with a better result at this point.
Okay. Can you tell us how people can contact you on Facebook, Twitter, and how they can donate to your campaign and just how they can keep up with what you're scheduling, what you're doing?
I would love to. You can contact me on Facebook at WASYLUKA, then the number 4, SENAT. That is also my Twitter handle. So Wazaluka, the number 4, Senate. You can also follow me on my website. It's Wazaluka, WASYLUKA, 4 spelled out, FORSENATE.com. And you can donate through my website and keep up with me. As you know, we have a primary coming up on June 5th, so I would love your vote and your donation. And if you don't know, absentee voting began yesterday, so if you're not going to be here in time for June 5th and you want to vote for me, the time to get your ballot in is right now.
And, okay, I got to ask you this. This is one question I left out, and it's becoming – there's been like the water warriors and a lot of different Facebook groups talking about all the chemical dumping that's being done in the Tennessee River. We even had Mr. Kennedy come down here and speak, and he's going to be testing that water. And the whole subject is really picking up steam after the local people have complained for years and years. Do you think we regulate these companies enough as far as the chemical waste that they're putting in the Tennessee River and as far as some of the dumping they're doing on private landowners? Because some of these private landowners, they're getting big money to allow these companies to dump on their land. But we all know that stuff has to go somewhere, and it goes into the ground and just all in that area. I can talk specifically about Lawrence County. And in Lawrence County, there's been like an outbreak of a lot of different things, you know, just like what you fought earlier in your life, the cancer. We got a lot of cancer and gastro problems going on in that area by young people. We got, heart attack doesn't care how old you are. I had one, a few years ago. But we're having an increase, and people are getting younger and younger with these heart attacks. Do you think that we are doing enough to regulate and keep up with what's being dumped in the Tennessee River?
No, I don't think that we are. And like everything, though, I think that this is a pendulum. I think that we have not been doing enough, but I think with the attention that has been brought to the issue with the lawsuit and the Tennessee Riverkeepers, that we are beginning to see the pendulum swing in the other direction and trying to put the good of the people and their health first, which is really what we need to be doing. We need to be placing people above everything else.
Yeah, because everybody deserves clean drinking water. We have got to have clean drinking water. And we got to look at that river as a food source, too. I mean, a lot of people don't want to eat any fish out of there. I mean, that's a big waterway. You know, we could be doing some good fishing in there, but a lot of people don't want to use that. And in my opinion, that's why I think the bass shop would never happen. I mean, who would want to put a bass shop over there in Decatur and you dumping all that stuff into the river? I mean, really. Okay, so I'm not going to hold you up. I know you're very busy with the campaign and things like that. So is there anything else you want to tell our listeners?
Yes. You know, I think coming into this next election cycle, one of the biggest issues that our voters need to pay attention to is ethics. With this last legislative session, we have seen several ethics bills which have come up which are decreasing the ethics in our state, and I think we're going to see that more and more over the next legislative session. And so we need to be electing legislators who are going to be transparent, because ethics begins with transparency, who are going to tell you what this bill does, why it's doing what it's doing, and fight to ensure that the good of the people is the basis for every bill. It should be the good of the people, not a national partisan agenda. And so we have to be very vigilant in looking at the types of bills which are coming out of Montgomery. Another thing that I'd like people to keep in mind when they're voting is ensuring that we get legislation and vote for legislators who will work to decrease the pay gap between women and minorities in our state. Right now, American families, hardworking American families, lose $11 billion a year. Actually, Alabamian families will lose $11 billion a year just because of the gender pay gap between men and women. So ethics and closing that gender pay gap to ensure that our families are getting the benefit of their work and that our people are getting the benefit of the work are things that I feel really strongly about. And I would ask, you know, your voters to consider that and vote for me on June 5th. Again, you can check me out at my website, www.waslukaforsenate.com. Again, we are focusing on healthcare, education, and infrastructure, kind of the building blocks of the American dream for Alabamians. And I would love your vote.
Okay. Something I left out. What about, let's see, I was going to see how you felt about drug testing welfare recipients. I know a couple of states that tried it. I think it might have been Florida, where they spent $3 million and caught two people.
I think it is fiscally irresponsible for a state so strapped as cash as Alabama.
That and, okay, what about the presidents? And I think there's been some talk about it in Alabama. What about making welfare recipients go to work? I mean, if they could work, maybe they wouldn't be on there.
Who's going to
help them find a job? I mean,
yeah. The work requirements I've seen have dealt with Medicaid, and I think it shows a basic kind of lack of understanding in terms of who your Medicaid recipients are and, you know, that a lot of these people cannot work.
And it also shows a lack of empathy on a lot of legislators down there in Montgomery. Like I said, they're sitting behind desks. They're sitting behind in the courtroom with their robes on and stuff like that. And some of them are worth a whole lot of money. But some of them didn't have that type of status until they got into public office. But now it seems like they have forgotten the struggles that they themselves have went through. That's why I appreciate your campaign. You know, I hate that you had, you know, you said the hearing and the cancer. I hate that you went through that. But we need people who have went through real life crises to be in public office and not to forget the crisis and how it devastated them, and to remember that when they get to Montgomery. It seems like when people get to Montgomery, they forget about every struggle they ever had.
Well, we do. You know, like I said, I've had struggles with healthcare. I've had struggles with jobs. When I was 8, my father lost his job, and we had to sell ceiling fans out of our house to keep the lights on. My background should serve as a reminder that health crises can happen to anyone. Financial crises can happen to anyone. These programs that are there in terms of welfare, in terms of Medicaid, are not handouts. They're there to help our people pull themselves up by their bootstraps so they can work. And if these programs are not there, it often means the difference between being able to work or not, between being able to be healthy or not. And we need to really remember that everybody deserves some basic respect and the ability to move forward in life.
Okay, and the last question is, what are your thoughts on a single payer?
Single-payer healthcare?
Yes.
You know, in a perfect world, I would love it. I don't know that we're going to go directly from the system that we have now to single-payer, but that doesn't mean that there aren't a lot of really great steps that we can make along the way. I think that's more realistically what we're working towards. And in terms of healthcare in Alabama, like I said, we can expand Medicaid. We can ensure that any legislation which comes out of Montgomery which deals with health care, such as the autism legislation, doesn't carve out exemptions of people who aren't afforded that protection, and then has those, you know, the people who don't get the benefit of that coverage be the people who are least able to provide that coverage for themselves. So there are things we can do at a state level to help with that.
Yes, I'm glad to hear, you know, from a grassroots standpoint, I'm glad to hear that you're in favor of expanding Medicaid.
I am. You know, Alabama, we already have issues with our rural hospitals closing. we've already, you know, lost out on some of that money. We need to do what we need to do, not only to cover, you know, to start closing the coverage gap, but also to, you know, ensure that our rural hospitals have the best opportunity to stay open, to ensure that we're cutting down on emergency room visits by investing in preventative care, which would be covered by Medicaid. There are a lot of benefits that our state could have by expanding Medicaid, and it makes no sense either fiscally or, you know, from just a human perspective that we don't do it.
Yeah. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we've been talking with Amy Wazaluka, candidate for Alabama Senate District 2, and she's running for a number of reasons that we just discussed. Among them is expanding Medicaid, supporting public education, small businesses, and also another hot topic in the grassroots and across the country is citizen reform, and she's all for that. So I'm encouraging all my listeners to check her out. Check her out on Facebook, Twitter, and just really come out and give your votes. I'm not going to tell you how to vote, but give your votes to regular people who have had real life crises, who are not going to get down in Montgomery and act like they don't know what these issues are. And so with that, we're going to end the show, and I'm going to wish you the best of luck in this upcoming primary, and hope you make it.
Thank you so much, and thank you so much for having me again. Primary is on June 5th, wazaluka4senate.com.
All right, and maybe we'll have you back.
Sounds great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right.
Bringing voices to power. I do not own the rights to this music. Bringing Voices to Power Network. www.thechildsupporthustle.com. Catch the Child Support Hustle Show Saturdays on the Bringing the Voices to Power Network. United Voices with Sherry Saunders. EmpoweringStrategies.net. Child Support Hustle Show with Kenya Rockman. We're bringing voices to power with many other activists like Brenda Hampton in Corlin, Alabama. We're bringing awareness to the people.